Good morning. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. And you are listening to Bicycle Talk, December 21st, 2016. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. My name is Peddlin' Ron, and I have my co-host here, Fran Storch. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar, and anything else you can think of that's bicycle-related or alternative transportation-related. I'm going to say that today because we are going to have a special show here. If you have a comment or you would like to contribute information to the show, please call us at 860-486-9487, or you can also text at that number, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I am always open to suggestions for future shows, always looking for different things to talk about. So please feel free to contribute. We love to hear from you. Okay, moving on. Ron's rant of the week. Wow, this was a tough one because there's just so many things that there are to rant about. I was visiting bicycle shops this past week, and I got into some discussions, and I talk to my bike dealers about this all the time, and I say, you know, if you have a rant, let me know. And oh boy, I opened a can of worms, and it was great. It was a really good thing. And we have future rants and future discussions coming up because of these rants, but because today is a special day, we're going to do something a little bit different. But I'm going to give you a sneak peek of these rants. And again, if you would like to email me on this, bicycletalk1@gmail.com, please do, because I am dying to hear what people have to say. One of the rants from one of my dealers was the planned obsolescence of bicycle parts. We'll talk about that in the future. Or disc brakes on road bikes. Oh boy, did that open a can of worms. But the one that came up that is common, and I'd love to talk about it. I'm going to do two rants today because of this, because this is really, really a timely thing. Buy your kid a bike for Christmas. If you have a child and they want a nice thing, a nice Christmas present or a nice Hanukkah present, something that would last them for a long, long period of time, how about a bicycle? Remember that? I used to work in a bike shop where we just had hundreds of bicycles on layaway for Christmas. Just doesn't happen anymore. Not seeing it. Buy your significant other a bicycle for Christmas. I do see a fair amount of that, but the kids and Christmas thing, folks, wake up. Your kids are getting to be they're not fit. They are overweight. They are not presenting well for their future. A bicycle can change that. It can change that forever. And there's nothing like the glow on someone's, on a little kid's face when they see their first bicycle. It's a beautiful thing. So that's one. But the second one, which brings us to our entire show, is going to be, I'm going to rant a little about people who are in too big of a hurry. And what this is related to is it's related to the drivers of cars and trucks and their impatience on the highways and dealing with both cyclists and pedestrians. And slow down, slow down, take a moment, take a breath, slow down. It's not that important. Unless you are an ambulance driver or a fire truck or a police car, it's not that important. So please slow down. Please consider the other folks that are on the road. We have there's just a rash of people being hit recently. Real big problem. It's because there's a lack of awareness. There's all sorts of reasons why. I can go on this forever. But of course, this show right now, we are dedicating to Myron Storch, my former, or I guess father-in-law. He passed away last week. And he passed away not because he was unhealthy, not because he was unfit, not because he was in any odd presence of mind. No, he was killed by a truck, a person driving a truck. And it's still pending. The investigation is still pending. We really, really miss Myron. He was a wonderful man. He wanted nothing but to make it safer for others that were traveling on the road that he was unfortunately hit on. He was just out for a walk. So here we are, people in too big of a hurry, not paying attention, and the report that came from the newspaper article, which was really not good, was that according to the possibly the police report or which doesn't exist yet, by the way, or the driver of the truck, that he darted out into traffic. Well, first of all, at 79 years old, God bless you if you can dart.
My dad didn't dart.
Your dad?
He wasn't a darter.
Your dad was not a darter. No, he was not a darter.
No, he was sporting a baby.
Yeah, he was no longer of the darting age. Or
he was not of the darting physique. That's why he was out for a walk.
So anyway, the common response after talking to a few people that are in the, let's say, the law enforcement world that I've had conversations with over the last week, that statement of dart is usually a statement that comes from a driver when they weren't paying attention. And then they go, I don't know, it just appeared out of nowhere. He darted across the street. It's the reason that happened is because you weren't paying attention. That's the reason that happened. So slow down. Just slow down. That's all. If the speed limit on the road is 30 miles an hour, go 30 miles an hour. If you have a hard time doing that, they have these wonderful little buttons on cars now. And there's, if you have an older car, sorry, you don't have this, but most of the new cars have cruise control. Put it on cruise control if you have a hard time holding that speed. You know, I try to go that slow, but my foot goes down the accelerator and I just go fast. No, just put it on cruise control. Go 30 miles an hour.
Well, can we talk about Jacaranda Boulevard for a minute?
We can. The road that Fran is referring to is a road in Florida, in Venice, Florida. And it is a busy street in the fact that it is a shortcut.
It's a connector from the interstate, from Highway 75 to the Tamiami Trail, which is Highway 41, which is a very busy, large road. Think Berlin Turnpike. It's the same kind of road as that.
Right, so if you're here in Connecticut.
Very busy and lots of shopping and lots of commerce. And anyway, it connects those roads.
Right.
It's a way to get from here to there. It's also a way to get to the beach.
Right.
So you can go down to like Manasota Key and get down to Englewood, and you can go down Jacaranda to get to the road to get you there.
Sure, and then when you get out to the busy street has four lanes of traffic, two in each direction.
Yep.
And like you said, it's lots of commerce on both sides of the street. But this street goes through a residential neighborhood.
Yes.
So it's a shortcut. It's kind of like the road that we live on.
You got it.
We live on a road in
Mansfield.
In Mansfield, that is called Bassett's Bridge Road,
and it connects Route 6 to Route 195, and people treat it like a freeway. Thank you very much.
Yes, they do. And they
same speed limit, 30 miles an hour.
Yeah. So they're it's the same thing. It's a 30 mile an hour road. It goes through a residential neighborhood. Our road, Bassett's Bridge Road, actually goes through a state park. So not only are there people that live on that road, but there's also a large number of people that are pedestrians, or they are, because they're out for a hike or a walk, or they are runners that use the road to get from one part of the park to the other part of the park. So because it's a beautiful 2,300 acre park, or it's heavily, heavily traveled by bicycles. It's one of the more popular roads in town, because when you ride through there on your bicycle, you wrap around a corner, it opens up, there's a huge reservoir, it's beautiful, it's picturesque, it's this lovely, lovely place to ride your bike, and or run, and or walk. So it's quite popular, and it's a 30 mile an hour road, just like the road that Fran's dad was killed on. And it's and people, because they're in too big of a hurry, back to Ron's rant of the week, because they're in too big of a hurry, they treat this road as their road, their freeway, their shortcut, and they don't take into consideration the fact that there's people there and lots of people that are actually using it for other modes of transportation. So you take a 30-mile-an-hour road, and it automatically becomes a minimum speed 45-mile-an-hour road, but quite often turns into a 50- or 60-mile-an-hour road, and in some cases a 70-mile-an-hour road, which is just completely unheard
outrageous,
of. If you're
yeah.
not on the freeway, then you shouldn't be doing 70 miles an hour. There's just no way. I mean, even the freeways are listed. Many of them are at 65 miles an hour.
Talk about my dad's activism.
So anyway, Myron Storch, God bless him, he was so upset by the speed of the traffic and the amount of traffic that used this road that he decided to get politically active. Remember how on previous shows I've talked about, you know, you need to get more politically active. We did. We had a big talk about that after the election. It's time to get involved. It's time to get out in your community. It's time to become a speaker in the community to make sure that you bring awareness. You want to become an advocate. And that's what Myron was doing. He was doing it to the point where he had contacted the town. He had contacted the police department. There was there were email exchanges that went back and forth on that. And he got to a point where they just didn't seem to want to do anything about it. And it was very, very frustrating. So he went out when the road was not busy, and he wrote in big, huge numbers, 30.
He stenciled them
in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Just to get people to pay attention to that sort of thing. Now, that's somewhat illegal. You're not supposed to do that, you know, but, you know.
And he also made a sign and marched up and down the street with a sign that said 30 miles an hour.
Yes. He would march up and down the street.
Because my dad is a goof.
Well, he's not a goof. Your dad was serious, and he was passionate about what was going on there.
That's true, too.
Your dad knew someone was going to be killed on that road. What he didn't know is that it was going to be him.
Well, and what we also don't know is we need some stats about. We have the stat that Tony Sirolas gave us about 35,000 people get killed on the roads as pedestrians.
Oh, I have a bunch
pedestrian.
Of stuff here today, actually.
But what we need are the stats of how many people have been killed as pedestrians on Jacaranda Boulevard. I would like to know.
There's a list there, too. I didn't pull that one up today, but I did see that that is not just a road that has traffic accidents with bicycles and cars, but it also has many traffic accidents car and car.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty it's a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But there's there's a lot of information out there about the even you know, I just went scanning around because I was curious as to what the story was with some of these things that you know, these accidents. And I even found there's a car and driver blog. You know, Car and Driver? Car and Driver is a magazine about cars and trucks. And
yep.
You know, they review cars and they review trucks and they review all this stuff. Well, Car and Driver has a blog page, and it's blog.carandriver.com. And one of their blogs was what's driving the massive surge in traffic deaths.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah. So there seems to be a big, big uptake on traffic deaths. So this stat comes from the latest fatality figures released this week show that 35,000 and 92 people were killed on public roads in 2015, an average of 672 every week, which is beyond the capacity of the jumbo jet at its highest passenger configuration. Think about that, okay? It's way safer to be on an airplane than it is to be in a car. I mean, you have a much higher chance of being killed in a car. Or being out in
a pedestrian,
car, or being out in car and truck traffic than you do flying on an airplane.
Right.
And we all fear these airplanes. You know, we all have this crazy fear of airplanes.
Well, the thing is, because if something happens on an airplane, it's generally catastrophic.
Absolutely.
So, but the likelihood of something catastrophic happening on an airplane is much lower.
Right.
But when it does, it's really bad.
And there have been warning signs, deaths for pedestrians and bicyclists have been on the upswing as of late, and the numbers for vehicle occupants ticked downward thanks to the introduction of the new technologies like airbags, electronic stability control, and more recently automated emergency braking systems. But now the rising figures include almost all types of road users. So it's not just cars and trucks. It's also pedestrians. It's also bicycles. And there are big increases going on right now. It's really... it's sad. I mean, this is what's happening. And we need to start taking a really, really good look at this. I found another piece right here, and this came from actually an industry piece from the Insurance Journal. Okay, why pedestrian traffic fatalities are on the rise. So the insurance industry, which is obviously very concerned at this sort of thing, because they are, you know, we all have a liability clause upon our insurance policies. When you buy an insurance policy for your car, there is a minimum required liability that you have for, like, things like, well, let's say it, accidental death, you know, things that might happen if you're in an accident and someone dies in the other vehicle and or is a pedestrian and or is a bicycle. There's insurance for that driver. So the driver doesn't end up losing everything they own because of that. They are insured against it. But the insurance industry knows about this because now it's a liability to them. And now they're looking at it as, what do we need to do about this? Because if this continues to grow, they have to pay out. And if they pay out, that just doesn't fit into their business profile. They're not into paying out. They're into taking money, not giving it away. So this has enough of a highlight that it has made one of their journals. So the people that are selling insurance and are in the insurance industry are now looking at this as a problem because they're starting to see a major increase. So it all comes back down to people not paying attention and people not slowing down. And I will immediately accuse the thing that I love more than anything else, because I now have a very, very nice weapon that I carry with me when I ride my bicycle, but the cell phone is possibly one of the worst things out there for our driving and distractions while driving. And that cell phone is something, I don't know what needs to be done about it. I don't know how you can make it any safer. I know that when I get in my car, my cell phone automatically links to my car. If my phone rings, it rings over my sound system in my car, and I just push a button on the steering wheel and I can talk. So I know that they're working on this technology and it's definitely getting better. But how about we just aren't able to use our phones in the car unless it's a 911 call? How about that for an idea? There's got to be someone out there who can figure out how to do this. There has to be a way of doing it. And I know that the big cell phone companies will be really, really upset to hear this. And go ahead, be upset with me. Send me a letter. You can send it to Bicycle Talk, the numeral run, one@gmail.com. I would love to hear how you think this is not a problem. This is, you know, we need to figure out a way to deactivate the cell phone while driving a car. That's all there is to it. That is the bottom line figure. That is the thing that will change everything. The insurance companies will be much happier for it. That's for sure. Maybe if you're in the insurance industry and you're listening to this, maybe you should get together with the other insurance companies and try to get this thing to go forward. You guys have more lobbying power than almost anyone in the United States. Go for it. Let's make it happen. Because what it comes down to is, if you're in a motorized vehicle, you're supposed to be paying attention to driving that motorized vehicle, not paying attention to anything else that's going on within that vehicle. So let's get your eyes off of your devices. Let's get your eyes on the road. And chances are, no one will dart out in front of you any longer. So I don't have a report on Myron's accident yet. We're still waiting for the results on that. We don't know if the driver of that vehicle was using a cell phone or not. We don't know if there were other circumstances. We don't know if there was an alcohol or drug problem. We don't know any of that at this time. So we're waiting on that.
We do know he was 55 years old.
He was 55 years old. Well, there's nothing wrong with being 55 years old. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really impair you in any way.
No, but of course, one of the concerns about Florida is Florida has more liberal penalty laws because people retire in Florida. And if they had stiff penalties for automobile accidents, people would move there to retire. They rely on people moving to Florida to retire for their economy. So this is something we may run into.
Right. Right. And you know, it's interesting, too, because I have some other figures here that I'm going to bring up because there were, you know, a number of deaths, pedestrian vehicle related deaths. The top three cities in the United States were all in Florida.
That right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you take a look. I mean, it was like Orlando was one because it's, you know, Disney. So there's, you
sure,
know,
it's that, a lot of traffic there traffic and there. A lot of people who don't know where they're going.
But I'll pull that up in a minute. I'll pull that up. So anyway, still on this, this is still from the Insurance Journal. You know, they said that pedestrians killed in traffic accidents are expected to have risen as much as 10% when the final 2015 statistics were available. So this is who's paying attention. The people who are paying out are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big, big problem. And another thing, the other thing here, the report aligns with one by the Government Accountability Office finding with more cyclists as well as pedestrians that are now involved in traffic accidents. Well, ho, ho. How about that? Who would have guessed? Pedestrians accounted for 14% of the traffic deaths in 2013, up from 11% in 2004. For cyclists, those figures increased from 1.7% to 2.2%.
Mm-hmm.
So this
because of that guy in Kalamazoo.
Well, it's not just him, but yeah, the guy in Kalamazoo definitely was a problem. I haven't seen any information about Kalamazoo. I Google it, I look, I try to find, and if anyone is listening, and I know I have listeners from out there that listen to us through our podcast, if you have any additional data to the Kalamazoo incident, please send it over to me. I would really like to discuss
maybe
this a little bit more.
Maybe we should contact the bike shop.
We could probably
put them on the air.
You know, that's another thing. We could probably do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll look at that as a future show, too. We can put him on the air and see what the deal is. But the point is, it's starting to become noticeable, you know. And what have we done? We have put protection devices in vehicles like anti-lock brakes and like airbags and now emergency warnings and emergency braking systems that keep you from rear-ending into the back of another vehicle or keep you from drifting over into someone else's lane. All of these things are being done for the automobile to keep automobiles and cars and trucks and people in them safe from one another, but they're not doing anything for the pedestrians or for the cyclists. So
do those lane, those lane awareness technology and the backup technology, if somebody darts out behind your car, will the car stop? That's what they're showing in the commercials.
The backup cameras, yes. Yeah. With the backup cameras, if you're backing up, yeah, they show it in the commercials. If you're backing up and then a child runs in front of the back of your car chasing a ball, the car will automatically slam on the brakes. So there is that technology. That's there. But I don't know about the side technology. I don't know exactly how that works, the lane drift and all that. Mm-hmm. I think it's simply an alarm system in the car, and that's all it is, which would be really nice if it was sensitive enough to grab a hold of a cyclist when they went by. So if you were within 3 feet of the cyclist, an alarm would go off every time. That would wake you up.
Yep.
That would definitely wake you up if you were within 3 feet.
And
of
be
a
annoying
cyclist.
Enough to train you to not do it.
It would also be annoying enough to, if you're on a narrow city street and you're driving down a narrow city street and there you can't have more than a foot of space between you and a parallel parked car on the side of the road. It could be extremely annoying.
Yeah.
Because that alarm would be going off all the time.
Right.
I mean, I couldn't drive in Boston with one of those alarms on my car.
Right.
Because it would just be screeching at me all the time.
Yeah.
Because the streets are narrow and it's busy and, you know, you got cars coming in both directions. I mean, it would be going off from the cars coming at me from the opposite direction, too. So it's just a matter of I don't know how sensitive they are. I don't know how they're going to work that all out, but I'm sure that it is going to create some annoyance. But, you know, maybe if we were paying more attention when we were driving our vehicles, we wouldn't have had to put this technology into the cars and trucks. And that is another way to look at that. So, you know, we've kind of created our own problem here. Those were a couple of things that I saw that I thought were interesting. There is a national organization that is called Complete Streets, which is addressing this right now. And so that's a good thing. There's other places, if you take a look and you can see, you know, seven traffic fatalities in America hit a seven-year high in 2015, with pedestrians and cyclists accounting for a disproportionate share of the alarming increase, according to some preliminary data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So last year, that would be 2015, 35,200 people were killed in traffic, 7.7% increase over 2014, and the worst death toll since 2008. Now, if you go back to 2008, we're going to back up to, you know, some of the pre-airbag days, you know, some of the pre-safety precautions within the cars days, and, you know, maybe the earlier days of anti-lock brakes. So, you know, if all of a sudden now we put all the safety equipment within the vehicle and where our numbers are climbing up at an astronomical rate again, then there's something else that's causing the problem. Pedestrian deaths shot up 10% last year, and bicycle deaths up 13%, more than any other types of victims, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So, let's give it a fair shake here. Driving also increased in 2015, but only by 3.5%, not enough to explain the rising death toll. So if you've got more drivers on the road, obviously you have, more chances for, you've got more liability because you're just going to have more cars, more trucks, more people out there. So that's going to happen. People walking or biking have accounted for a growing share of the total traffic deaths since 2007, and there's little agreement about the underlying causes. In addition to the usual rush to blame victims by invoking distracted walking, okay, yeah, they blame the walker. There you go, blame the walker. By the way, folks, we're here on a university campus. We have crosswalks everywhere. And I will tell you that they're pretty good here, pretty good for the most part, because there's so much pedestrian traffic on this campus and so much, well, and not quite as much bicycle traffic, but lots of pedestrian traffic, that people are pretty good about stopping at the crosswalks. But that is a law. You have to stop at the crosswalk. You know, if someone steps into the crosswalk, most state laws tell you that you have to. And if there's not a crossing light there, a signal light for crossing, and they step into a crosswalk, you're supposed to stop. And if you're not aware of that, then now you should be. This is a very, very important thing. Someone steps into that crosswalk, they intend to cross the highway, and you are supposed to stop. That's the law. That's the way it works. So distracted walking, it's kind of a gray area. The theories also include increases in biking and walking overall, which is truly a big deal. And we know that because the millennial age that has now decided to move on from their college education and move into big cities and walk and cycle to work. And and also those that are actually going to university in big cities, they're using alternative modes of transportation because it is, you know, it's less expensive. So anyway, there is an increase in biking and walking overall. Driver distraction and low gas prices. There we go. There's another reason why low gas prices are a big problem. Of course, I have a very, I'm very biased here. I would love to see the price of gas at $10. It sounds great to me. Why? Because it'll make people ride their bicycles more. It'll make people pay attention. We'll become much more fit. We'll become much healthier. Everything will make a big difference, and our air will get cleaner. A lot of things will change. And then we can use that. If the price of gas were to go super, super high and it was related to heavy taxation on the gasoline, and we were able to improve our infrastructures because of it, and then it would be more conducive for you to use mass transportation and to be able to safely ride your bicycle or walk on the streets, that would make a big difference. There are also another thing with the low gas prices. It promotes more marginal drivers. Get this, more marginal drivers, like teenagers. So if you're a teenager and you're making minimum wage, and, you know, your parents have been responsible enough to make you pay for your insurance and, you know, maybe some of your car expense. And so you've got costs to driving your vehicle and the price of gas is $4 or $5 a gallon, then you're going to not drive the vehicle as much, are you? Or you're going to carpool, so you're going to put a lot of people in the car at the same time, and they're all going to share the costs of the price.
Right.
Right? But if the cost of the price of gas is down to a couple of dollars a gallon like it is right now, more younger drivers, or what they like to call right here on this particular site, a marginal driver, like a teenager, they're more crash prone. And because they're more crash prone, we have problems with this. Crashes involving younger drivers ages 15 to 20. 15? You can drive a car at 15. I guess you can with a learner's permit. Increased by 10% in 2015. 10%. So it's just really kind of crazy because the United States is falling further behind other nations that have sustained impressive reductions in traffic fatalities, while countries like the UK, Japan, and Germany achieve rapid improvements in street safety. America has failed to keep people safe on the streets. This is a statement. You know, we have a problem here. We need to start paying attention to this. I did a show a few weeks back. Well, it was a bit back by right around the election time. And I talked about how we need to get politically active right now because there is talk of the new administration that is coming in. That is they're going to be pushing really hard to build infrastructure. And I think either one of the candidates that may have received the vote for president of the United States, they were both talking in that direction of rebuilding infrastructure because rebuilding infrastructure brings jobs back to the U.S. and that's a big concern. So there was a lot of talk about that. So this is a time once again to pay attention to what's going on politically in your neighborhood and see what's going on. There is a national complete street coalition, and that can be reached at Smart Growth America, all together, smartgrowthamerica.org. If you go there, you're going to see the National Street Complete Streets Coalition, and you're going to see that streets are a vital part and a livable, attracting part of our society, attracting communities. So the idea behind this is to try to get people a little bit more aware of how we can share our roads and make our streets more conducive to our, you know, social responsibilities and, you know, just getting out and seeing people. You don't see people in your car. When you drive by in a car, you don't get to meet anyone unless you run into them, and then you get to meet them the hard way. So that's probably not a really good thing. But if you are riding your bike or you're walking, people are everywhere and they're friendly and they'll talk to you and it's really nice. I've talked to police departments and I'm threatening to do this police show, and I will do it very soon, I promise. The police officers that ride bicycles, they are just ecstatic about it because it changes the entire situation with them and the people on the streets. They get to actually have a much better conversation with them. There's less of a fear factor that is involved, and they also have a higher arrest rate because they can see things happening better when they're outside of their cruisers. So that's another story for another time, and we will get into that. But the complete streets are for everyone. They're designed and operated to enable safe access for all users, including pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists, and transit riders of all ages and abilities. So complete streets makes it easier for you to cross the street, to walk to shops, to bicycle to work, to allow buses to run more on time, and to make it safe for people to walk to and from train stations. So there's just so many wonderful things you can do to make your streets safe, but nothing happens until you get out and open your mouth and become vocal. Do it for Myron. Do it for my friend Myron Storch. Do it for Franny's dad, who was taking political responsibility and was getting out and was trying to make people aware of, you know, exactly how dangerous roads can be and how people were exceeding the speed limit on a regular basis, and unfortunately gave his life for it. But let's get out so no more people do this, okay? We want to get out there, make some noise. Let's start the revolution. You know, this is an important thing. It's very important. These are people's lives and their families and their communities that are involved here. And we need to you don't want to react, you want to act. That's what we're really looking for here. I'm not a big believer in, you know, violent protesting or anything like that. I don't think that's really good. But I am a big believer in action. And, you know, you can make some phone calls. You can make some personal appearances. You'd be really surprised how far you can get once you get your face out there and say, hey, look, I'm not the bad guy here. You know, I'm just someone who is concerned about more than just me. I'm concerned about everyone, and I want to make sure I get that point across. And that's where you have to do it, right there. You have to you got to be selfless. That's really what you have to be, and you have to start thinking about the big picture. And if the big picture happens to have something to do with your grandchildren or your children or your neighbors or whatever, your friends, whatever it may be, you need to get yourself out there, get your face out in your community, and let people know that you want safer streets. And it can be done. It is not a difficult thing. You know, if the streets are safer, you know, the people talk about, well, I'm afraid to go walking down that street because that street has, you know, some bad things going on. Well, what if there were more people walking down that street? Then less bad things would be going on in that street. And that is something that has been proven over the years. The more active you make your streets, pedestrian friendly and bicycle friendly, the safer your street gets, because the folks that might be doing things that are illegal tend to not want to be around a lot of people. That's not their gig. They're looking for a private area which is dark and basically is unsafe for others.
Other side of that is that if more people, say that lots of people walked up and down Jacaranda all the time, motorists would be used to seeing them and they'd be used to looking out for them.
Correct. And that's exactly right. So the more physical awareness you have to people using those streets, the better it gets. It certainly makes a big difference.
One of the things that I did is I went out for a walk run myself from my parents' house. And what I wound up doing is getting off Jacaranda as soon as possible. I took Indian Hollow down to, there's Venice Avenue East Venice Avenue, then East Village Avenue, which are Venice Avenue East, I believe, is a road that runs parallel to Jacaranda, and it's much less busy. And Jacaranda is not really wonderfully set up for pedestrians and cyclists, although it does have sidewalks and it definitely has crosswalks. And the problem is, like you said, that section of Jacaranda from, Center Road, to the Tamiami Trail, it's all residential. So people are going to be prone to walk there. And if they want to get off Jacaranda, which maybe my dad wanted to do, that he was actually, Sklar is maybe two intersections west of where their road is. And he was probably trying to cross so he could go onto one of those other roads off of Jacaranda.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get off Jacaranda and go somewhere else where it was nicer.
And sometimes you have to use a busy street to get to a quiet street.
Exactly. You have to use the crosswalk. And he was on a crosswalk when this happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Massachusetts, big shout out to Massachusetts. They're very involved in complete streets. They've got a lot going on there. And, you know, they're 77% of Massachusetts roadways are locally controlled, and state policies on complete streets do not directly apply to them. So they're going after this because this is something that they feel is really important. And I can tell you, by the amount of time that I spend in Boston, they really need to pay attention to it, because Boston is crazy. It's crazy as it is just to drive a vehicle into Boston, but, you know, riding a bicycle there and walking there, it's actually, I know a number of people who live there. I know a number of people who work there, and they all ride their bikes to work. They're very active. It's a very active community for bicycling. It's amazing how many people are on a bike in Boston. And you know, considering the number of people that are out there, they don't have a huge problem with fatalities. They are extremely aware. You cannot, there's no way you can't be aware of the fact that there are bicycles on the road in Boston. They're everywhere. They're just everywhere. And if they aren't, then there are giant sharrows in all the roads that are used by cyclists that show you that this road is a road that is shared by a bicycle. Now, for those of you who don't know what a sharrow is, I'm usually preaching to the choir here, so you probably all know. But if you don't know what a sharrow is, it's a combination of a silhouette of a bicycle and two arrows that they're kind of look like chevrons that are next to it or on top of it. And they're called sharrows because they're share the road arrows is what they are. So the idea is that, you know, they've done a great, great job of this. And, you know, I'm having a political discussion with a local town here about putting these big sharrows down their main street because there is A, already a lot of bicycle traffic there, and B, there is also a connection of a major greenway project that is, it's 0.6 mile long, and put them out on the main street. They're already there. That's fine. If it can be done in a city as busy as Boston, it can be done in a small town. It's really not difficult. And what it does is it gives that awareness, that thing where the more people that use it, the more you're going to be looking for people that are using it. So the idea is to build it. You got to build it and build it and build it and stay with it. So anyway, there are funds available for this thing, and it's important that you check into it. Again, I would look at smartgrowthamerica.org, look at their website, and you can see all the information there. I'm looking right now at the a piece that was presented. There's a pretty large file here that was presented in Massachusetts, because Massachusetts is very, very progressive. And it doesn't just have to be in the Boston area. I know that I have a friend of mine who owns a bicycle shop, some friends who own a bike shop in Westfield, Massachusetts. And they're extremely active in complete streets and in getting more safety in bike lanes. And they really, really hate share the road signs too. They prefer to, they don't want you just to share the road. They've got a very strong statement they say about it, but the share the road signs, they say do not really slow down traffic. So that's another story. But what really shows slows down traffic is you need to have that separate lane. You need to have the awareness of the separate lane. That's really the safest way to do this. But, you know, a sharrow is definitely a step in the right direction. It certainly helps. The signage on the side of the road really doesn't encourage a lot. I think that the signage in the road is a better idea. I even am starting to see it now on the highways. When you're approaching a major intersection on, say, an interstate, you'll now see, as well as, of course, the big signs overhead that tell you, you know, this exit for whatever, you'll see the actual paint in the lane that tells you that you're in the correct lane to make the exit to the other throughway that there is out there. So for some reason, people seem to see the pieces on the road better than they even see the signs. So that's another way to alert folks as to understanding how you're supposed to be sharing the road. So again, get active, get out there, do something about it, because this death statistic is just going up, and it's not getting any better. So we really need to start paying attention to it. And you know, we're not the only ones that are paying attention to this as cyclists and as pedestrians. It is being paid attention to by you know, places like Car and Driver magazine. Come on, man. That's like, that is definitely a motorist driven and industry driven, car industry driven magazine. There is no question about that. And yet they're paying attention to it. So that's something. The fact that you can find this information on insurance journals, that you can go to the insurance industry and you can discover. And if anybody out there is in the insurance industry, please, 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 send over as much information as you can, wiggle out, so to speak. I'd love to know the stats. I'd love to know, you know, what it is the insurance industry is looking at and how serious this particular problem is. So if you want to leak some information to me, that would be great. BicycleTalk, the1@gmail.com. I will take a look at it and I will decipher what I need to decipher. I will keep you completely anonymous and we can talk more about exactly how the insurance industry is dealing with this alarming concern that we have going on right now. So let's keep our eyes open. We all need to work together on this to make our streets safe. It's really, really important. If you are out, this is a very, very busy time of year. We have a big holiday weekend coming up. The roads are going to be very busy and full of cars and trucks. And, you know, we really need to be extra, extra careful. And I hope everyone has a safe holiday season and doesn't have any problems within their holiday season. We just need to be a lot more careful. I also saw this really interesting stat, and then I couldn't find it again, so I'm going to have to poke around here. But I just got a piece that said the car industry, and I'm going to have to look it up at another time. I just don't have it in front of me right now. The car industry is now up to a point where the differences between cars and trucks, and that's another thing. The increase of trucks has become a big problem, and there are more incidents with trucks than there are with cars as far as safety issues go. So that's another thing to take a look at. But we're up to a rate here in the United States where 40% of the vehicles that are sold in the United States are cars. 60% are trucks. And if you're saying, how could that possibly be? I don't drive a truck. And you drive an SUV? Yes, you do. And if you think that your SUV is a car and that's the way it should be, you're missing the point. The car companies, the people who are manufacturing cars and trucks, they started this out years ago as a way to sell you a truck so that they could sell you a vehicle that did not have the restrictions on it that the passenger vehicle had on it. This was done a long, long time ago, and eventually it was exposed, and then the car manufacturers had to finally start paying attention, and it took until 2008 for the truck industry or the truck building industry to finally hit safety and emissions concerns of the car industry. So if you don't have to put as much emission equipment on a vehicle, or if you don't have to put as much safety equipment in a vehicle, guess what? You can make the vehicle cheaper and you can make a lot more profit on it. So this is all about money. It's not about anything else. It's all about money. And so if you think you've been wooed into this wonderful SUV because it is the best thing that's out there, you were tricked. You were tricked by the car companies. They do this, and the problem that I have with it, and I know I'm ranting again, and I already did my rant earlier, but I'm ranting again. The problem that I have with it is these vehicles are too big to sustain our roads, first of all, as far as the impact to the roads, and also they are too big for us to share with you when we're riding our bicycles or when we're walking. So the enlargement of the automobile, going back to vehicles, I haven't seen vehicles this big since the 70s, 60s and 70s. I haven't seen vehicles this big. They're enormous. And granted, they are safer than they were in the 60s and 70s. You know, they have a lot more safety concerns on them and within them, but they're still big. They're still way too big, and they're heavy, and they do a lot of impact to our infrastructure, and it's a problem. So we need to maybe start looking at, we'll get to a New Year's resolution show next week, probably, right? I think that's what we're looking at. So when we get to that, maybe one of your resolutions would be to get a smaller vehicle. You know, I have a friend who does my fitness walking class, and she went from an SUV down to a car when she got her new car. And she'd been driving an SUV for 11 or 12 years.
I like my little wagon.
And then she went down to a car. Yeah. I like anything that has a hatch on the back so I can get in and out of it easily. And
right.
It's practical to me. That's what works. So I've got a little piece here I wanted to end the show with. We're getting close to the end. We're going to walk away from this particular discussion right now. If anybody has any more discussion to give us on this, I would love to hear your concerns. I'd love to hear your feedback. Again, it is bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Please send me over anything you have. And yes, I'm going to reset to something that I did last week and have been doing for previous weeks. But we have this big event going on here in Hartford, Connecticut. And it is the Cyclocross National Championships. And it starts on January 3rd and it goes through January 8th. It's at Riverside Park in Hartford. It is just, I am beside myself. I think Fran can probably agree on this one. She's been watching me get awfully excited about this whole cyclocross thing. She's nodding with that look of, oh boy, if I have to hear this again, I'm not going to be able to handle it. But anyway, it's a national championship race. It is in Hartford. It is put on by USA Cycling. It is also co-sponsored by a number of different things, but one of them is CCAP, which is the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, which is based out of Middletown, Connecticut, and they get kids on bikes, and that I can't say enough about getting kids on bikes. I had the executive director here last week, and I also had some another person here who was involved with a lot of the after hours pieces that are happening with this particular event. But there is racing every day from January 3rd until right on through January 8th at Riverside Park in Hartford. Go online, check it out. You can Google it. You'll find it there for sure. It's the Cyclocross National Championships. Yay, yay, yay. Special events that are happening. There is a bicycle art show on Thursday. There on Friday, there's a Mechanics National Championships. Boy, if you haven't seen that, that's a hoot. Yes, there's probably some alcohol involved with this, but there are also these mechanics that will change a flat tire faster than you have ever seen a flat tire change in your life. And it's very entertaining. On Saturday, there's the National Championship VIP reception and also the Shimano Industry Party. So there's a big party in downtown Hartford. There's a lot of things going on. Saturday, there's a youth cyclocross on-course clinic. So if you're a younger rider and you want to learn more about this and see what it's all about, there is actually a youth clinic there to show you all about it. And, of course, on Sunday, the 8th, there is the Champions Party, which is at 7 p.m. after everything is over, and hopefully we're all picked up and done with everything that's going on. So there's a lot of stuff going on. There's if you go to the CCAP website, you will find that they will have a National Cyclocross Championship link on there, and it'll give you the schedule. It'll give you schedule events, everything that's going on through the entire week in Hartford. There's a couple of other things too I just wanted to bring up and highlight. There's the Wednesday night Hanging Hills Gold Sprints party, and you have to be 21 or above. And so anyway, it's a neat little thing. It's at the Hanging Hills Brewery on Ledyard Street in Hartford. So it's from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. And yeah, cyclocross is kind of interesting because cyclocross isn't just it's not just the racing that goes on. There's a certain party aspect that goes along with it. People that race cross they have a sense of humor. I went to the KMC cross race back in early October, and when I was there, a gentleman came up with lots of mud on him, and he had a big full beard, and he was standing there in a woman's attire, and I looked at him and I laughed and went, "I got it, you're a cross dresser," and he goes, "You got it." And you just completed a race dressed like that. So, you know, you are going to see things that you don't see at normal races. It's a much looser atmosphere. Cyclocross it brings out the best in us. And single speed guys. Yes. Can you imagine doing a race that on a varied terrain like this through deep mud and all sorts of crazy stuff and doing it with only one gear on your bike.
Yeah.
That's quite a feat, by the way. It's difficult enough with gears, believe me. The course is also online. You can check that out, too. There's a lot of links through USA Cycling. You can just go to usacycling.org, and you will find information about that. There are also some other things that are going on. Friday night, there is going to be a builders and beer party. And what is it? It's craft beer plus craft bicycles equals win. I think that's very funny.
Are you going? Yes.
Yes. I am definitely going there. The frame builders will be announced, and it's at the Hog River Brewery on Park Street in Hartford.
So that's January 6th?
And that will be on the Friday, yes.
Friday, January 6th. Okay.
So, and that is after the party is when there will be the Bicycle Mechanics National Championships at the Black Bear Saloon. Yes, here we go. The theme is definitely around... there's some alcohol involved,
mm-hmm.
but there's also, you don't have to drink. You can get a seltzer, you know, you can do that. That's fine.
Why would you do that?
Well, because some people don't drink.
That's true.
You know, some people don't do the alcohol thing.
That's true.
And then Saturday night, Bisico, which we are good friends at Bisico. We love those guys. They have a happy hour and a Crosshairs live podcast. So that's CXHairs live podcast. Crosshairs is, there's actually a website for Crosshairs too. If you want to go check them out, you can check them out. They're kind of cool. They're going to be interviewing some pro riders like Adam Meyerson and Spencer Haw and Emily Kocharek. And they will be talking about improving your technique and skills for going and doing cross fast, live questions and answers. And that will be on Saturday night. So that's kind of all part of that and the whole Shimano party and all. It's just so much cool stuff going on. It's really exciting. It's very, very exciting. Can you tell? Yeah, I know. You've heard it too much. But it's you know, this is it. We have a national championship cross race here in Hartford. It's very exciting. It's coming up. I'm starting to get nervous because there's so much to do before we get it going, but that's okay. We're gonna do fine. So please stay tuned. I will give you more information. My name is Pedal and Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you want to contact us, please contact us at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs.